Blog Talk Radio.
Out at foggy midfield, muddy midfield, although they've done a heck of a job getting the field ready, they just tossed the coin. To start the proceedings.
Over back, looking left, looking in. He's going to go long down the left side. There he is. And it is caught. 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Jason Crew.
Welcome to the Nothing But Sports Show on NBS Central Radio, hosted by Jay Franchise, Yvonne Maddox, and Truex the Sports Junkie, where they give the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
So help us God.
What's good to everybody in Sports Talk America. It's your boy, Jay Franchise, here live. We got a special, exclusive interview, and I'm going to just go ahead and get it started. So I'm going to introduce everybody to former Stanford All-American as well as current WNBA player for the New York Liberty, Candace Wiggins. What's going on, Candace? How you doing?
What's up? Hello. How are you?
Oh, man, life is good. No complaints. Trying to stay warm in Maryland. I know the, I know you're enjoying life in Cali.
I am. I really am.
All right. Awesome. So since my co-host can't make it tonight, I'm gonna just go ahead and get the show on the road. So
all right,
let's begin. So at what age did you decide to start, or did you start playing basketball?
I was 5 years old when I started playing basketball, and you know, it's 5 years old, it's a very self-aware age. So I was very aware. I was five and very proud of it, but then I was playing up with older girls who were third and fourth grade. So they weren't five, they were like, you know, seven and eight. And so you really become aware that you're five when you're playing up, you know. So I was 5 years old.
All right, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So after an illustrious high school career, what made you choose the Stanford Cardinal back in 2004 over the likes of Duke, UCLA, USC, Arizona, Tennessee, and UConn?
Well, you know, it was actually a very difficult decision. The first part about it was kind of a twofold thing, you know. With Stanford, it was the one school out of all those that you named. Stanford was the only school that you had to get accepted in first before you could commit there. You know, so you had to apply, so you had to fill out an application. So the application process for Stanford was really what kind of opened up my eyes to the whole recruiting world, because as I was waiting on finishing my application from Stanford, I could look at the other schools, and I was taking lots of, you know, unofficial visits to USC and UCLA, obviously. And at the time, I was a two-sport athlete. So volleyball, I was playing volleyball at the time, and it was a really big part of my decision because I wanted to play both in college. So, you know, UCLA and USC, I went and I met the volleyball coaches there, and I had friends that were going there, so it was really easy. I went to the camp at UCLA when I was 14. So, you know, I think the hardest part was kind of, you know, the obviously getting into Stanford. The application process was very difficult, but also for me, you know, deciding location-wise, where did I want to be, you know? So I really wanted to stay close to home, and my mom was really, really big on me staying home. You know, then Duke was really alluring, too. I went on an official visit there, and it was really alluring because they were just, you know, my favorite player at the time, Elena Beard. Like, she was playing there, and she hosted me on her visit, so I really felt like, you know, it was a really special experience. But I think for me, going to Stanford, first of all, getting accepted, and then going on my visit, one of the things I got to do was I got to visit my brother, my older brother, who was a year older than me. He played at University of San Francisco, and he was playing basketball there, and I got to visit with him during my visit to Stanford, and I think that was really when it sealed the deal, because I always knew that no matter how hard life got for me in college, I always had a big bro right up the street in San Francisco.
Oh, that's pretty tight. That is pretty tight, and you really did have an awesome high school career. I realized that you had won like just about every accolade you could possibly win, and also you were one of the top five players to come out in the class of 2004, which was pretty.
Well, I had
amazing
a great
too.
Class. I mean, I was I went to school in high school at Charter Houston in San Diego, and Candace Parker and our class were just we're up there, in terms of our legendary status. But I was just fortunate enough to grow up around a whole bunch of certified ballers and, just allowed myself to, compete with them at the highest level. And that's kind of how I got better,
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. So what was it like playing for the legendary coach Tower Vanderveer?
It's like a living a dream for me because people don't understand, I remember when I was in, I was 10 years old and when the 96 Olympics, and, I remember watching Tara Vanderveer as the Olympic coach, watching her as the Stanford coach at the same time. She was superwoman to me. She was super coach. She was the coach where she's coaching at the school you want to go to of your dreams, and she's coaching on the team that you want to grow up and play on, the Olympic team. So she was just everything for me, sitting at the TV, like looking straight. I just started reading her body language, and I just loved how calm she was and how much respect she commanded from the greatest players, iconic women, figures. She had them all, and you could tell that they all just respected her, and you didn't really understand what the mystique was about her, but you knew it was something she had that was golden. So when I got there, when I finally got in and it got accepted and committed and, finished high school and got up to Stanford and got to see Tara, first day of training camp in September, and we're on the track, and it's Tara Vanderveer, and this is, hi, Tara, hi, Candace. I looked forward to it, People would probably be groaning if they're on the track, but I was excited that I was on the track with Tara. Like, what am I going to have to do? Am I going to have to run 2 miles and kill myself? Like, you just really want to play your best for her, and you know that whatever you're getting, it's just so great. And so every day for me, as challenging as it was, and it was challenging. Now it was very challenging, but as challenging as it was, it was just as fun for me because I appreciated my time with her, and I vowed to myself, like, I'm not going to take this, So by the time it was 4 years, you're just so complete. So I just loved Tara. It was an absolute honor playing for her, and everything I did for her.
Yeah, it seemed like she was always great about putting her players in the right. And a great opportunity to be successful, not only on the court, but off the court. And
always.
She's a great motivator as well. I mean, watching
a
lot of, not only
watching.
Yeah, oh, big time. Watching her, coach you guys, throughout the years, even before your playing days to while you were playing the 4 years that you were at Stanford to now. She's a very, she's an
absolutely
awesome coach as far as, like, getting her players, not only to understand the game but to see the game from a different set of eyes, which is interesting.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Of all of your collegiate accomplishments, from winning the Wade Trophy, being a Wooden Award finalist, winning or becoming an AP All-American 4 years in a row, even – being a four-time All-Pac-10 selection. What was the most, of all those accomplishments, which one of those meant the most to you?
I would say when I was in college, I was pretty oblivious to, the impact. But I think at the time, I would say that, and right now I would even say, there was one that's award that was really overlooked a lot. It was the senior, the Lowe's Senior Class Award. CLASS, and it was kind of a really cool award that I won that. And to me, that was kind of a cool award because it really signified more than that. It was kind of like, your character was put on the line and more things than just, how your talent was. Because there's so many talented athletes, but to kind of just be put aside as a senior standout, you know what I'm saying, and just being recognized for that was pretty cool at the time. I remember thinking, like, wow, that award is really an honor, and I really felt flattered by that.
Wow. That's very interesting. I didn't think you was going to give me that answer, but that's interesting.
Well, yeah, and, you know, so and I would, you know, but also, you know, the Wade Trophy was cool and all that, but I would say for me, you know, personally.
That's cool. That's awesome. So how does it, so back in 2008, you know, you were drafted number 3 overall by the Minnesota Lynx. How did you feel having your name being called up at the WNBA draft?
Well, you know, it was really strange because I played in the game the day before that. So I was just, I really wasn't thinking about many things during that time. Honestly, my only thought, and this sounds so shallow and superficial, but I'll be honest, was like, I was wondering, okay, how do I look? You know, does my outfit look cute? Because I didn't have time to really prepare for those things. So, you know, you just really just don't want to focus on falling down. And then, you know, you're really thinking about those trivial things. And then for me, it was just kind of like, okay, Minnesota, I just kind of started thinking, is there anything I know about this at all? And I just really had minimal thoughts. Minnesota was kind of this far away, mystical place. Even the Lynx, like a Lynx. I didn't even know what a Lynx was. So I'm just like, okay, what? You know, it just sounds like there's just, I might as well say, you're going to Antarctica. You got drafted.
Right.
So it's like, you just don't really know what that even means. But I did remember that I had a couple of teammates from Stanford that I played with, that I adored, that played in Minnesota. So I thought about them, you know, one in particular who was from Minnesota, and I thought about warm, wonderful thoughts about her, because she was a great teammate. So I was like, oh, Minnesota has great people, you know? And then I remember thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we lost to Minnesota. We played Stanford, we lost to Minnesota my sophomore year, and it was just devastating. It was at Minnesota. I just remember it being freezing cold and, like, miserable, and we lost. So I just had all these, like, very angry feelings towards Minnesota. And I still felt like the, like, you know, that bitterness from that loss because of the fans. But then I remember thinking, wow, well, they're on my side now, so maybe they'll be, you know. It was all these different things. You just don't really know the dynamic of the city you're about to go into, and you just start kind of thinking about what they might think about you, you know.
Okay. That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. So this past year, you signed with the New York Liberty, and you decided to start working with Iris House. So tell the viewers about that volunteer experience.
Well, for me, you know, I think it's really important that you do things that match what you believe in, and it just makes things a lot more, you know, your experience is a lot more pleasant and meaningful and impactful. So for me, it started, you know, kind of with research started in Los Angeles with my own story. You know, my father, I think everyone's pretty much familiar with the story, but I was able to, you know, kind of interact with Magic Johnson playing on the Sparks. And, you know, he really steered me, the Magic Johnson Foundation steered me towards Iris House. That's kind of how it started. But then I was able to go there and visit them this summer and share my experience, really. For me, it's just about engaging with the community that I'm reaching out to and, you know, just doing the part that I can do. And just, like I said, lending your voice, something like HIV and AIDS is a cause that I'm very passionate about. But it's something that's very sensitive. It's very sensitive to, you know, to children especially. It's a sensitive subject, a sensitive idea. So you have to be, you know, aware of that. So, and I am. But Iris House is a very safe environment for such a stigma like HIV to exist and live, and live it with joy and peace and bring families together instead of driving them apart.
Okay, very interesting. So, wow, that's very, very interesting. And I definitely need to go ahead and donate to everybody out there. Donate to Iris House. Show some support to those guys. They're doing wonderful things.
Yep, irishouse.org. It's a wonderful website as well.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes, definitely is. So I was also reading the Rick Selector's project. You had written a very, very deep and interesting piece called You Taught Me Not to Judge, which was awesome. Or He Taught Me Not to Judge. And it was about your father.
Yes.
And, you know, in talking and reading it, I realized that you were very close to your father and got a very interesting relationship. And I didn't even know that your dad was a baseball player and played for the Orioles and other teams.
Yep.
What was the motivation behind writing this piece?
I think for me it was a realization that for all my entire life, as famous and wonderful as my father was, and, you know, I heard about him and I just completely compartmentalized him and pushed him away, completely judged him, and it took me 25 years to read his obituary, first of all. I didn't read his obituary until I was 25 years old. And when I read it, it just hit me like a ton of bricks and the pain, and like it was just the hardest thing I ever did because I couldn't believe that for all those years I compartmentalized this man's story and he was my own father. So I couldn't just imagine what, you know, how it can really ruin you if you don't, you know, if you, the judgment alone, sheer judgment alone, you know, without even having any kind of idea of what the story is, but just completely just writing something off, like, oh, nope, that's it. That story's done. It's over. It can be really dangerous and harmful, more to yourself than the person you're judging. Because the person you're judging has their own life, you know, but you are the one who has to live with being the judgmental person. You have to live with that torment.
That's interesting. Great point. Great point. So I also read this article that you had written and you collaborated with the Players Tribune called The Five Toughest Players I've Ever Guarded.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And I found it to be so interesting.
yeah.
You mentioned Simone Augusta. She's actually from my home state of Louisiana, and I actually watched her play basketball.
Yeah.
She was phenomenal, tough.
Right, yeah.
And phenomenal.
Legendary.
You mentioned, yes, oh, yes. You mentioned Gia Perkins.
Yep.
Skylar Diggins.
Mm-hmm.
Tamika Catchings. And
mm-hmm.
Diana Taurasi. So
of
those five, only had to choose one. Who was the toughest that you ever had to guard?
DT. Diana Taurasi, always. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Always.
Why so?
She's like, Diana's
what
like,
was,
it's like,
what was her
Diana feels like.
What was okay, go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
Diana's my same class as my big sister. I have a big sister. And my big sister, she's, you know, she's a tough girl. She's a big, mean girl. No, she's really tough. That's where I get my toughness from. And they're the same class, Diana and her are. And, you know, they both grew up in L.A. County. And it's just there's a tougher edge that they have to them, you know. So I think Diana, for me, represents like my older sister that you can never really beat because she's always older and she always knows more than you. And you just kind of look up to her and you're just in a position where you can only admire. You can't really try to beat because you're not really going to ever be on that level. You have to wait your time because she's always older, you know. But she's, you know, for me, I got to witness Diana. And I know, you know, how far back her talent goes, and I've seen it with my own eyes. And, you know, we all just love her. You know, in Southern California, we feel like we, you know, we've got to witness her greatness more than anybody.
Oh, man, that's pretty cool. So I'm going to ask you this question. I know this is on the spot. You may not have had much time to really think about this, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a go. So,
okay.
Who is on your women's basketball Mount Rushmore? Five greatest
women's basketball
players to play the game. Yes.
Well, there's only one Mount Rushmore. So, can we just make it like one whole Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, you can if you want.
Cuz if it's a Mount Rushmore, this is like an epic thing. So you want just like a whole, who's on the four, my Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, your Mount Rushmore.
This is in Candace Wiggins' world, right?
Yes, in Candace Wiggins' world.
Okay,
everybody's
so this is my Mount Rushmore.
I've asked the question to plenty of people and plenty of athletes, and they've given me different answers, and it's been very interesting. But in your world, in your opinion,
in my world,
who's on your
Mount
Rushmore? Mount
Rushmore, you know, or obviously we can't, but this is in Candace's world. I would put Michael Jordan.
And women's basketball. Women's basketball.
Oh, I'm saying this is a whole. I thought this was just one Mount Rushmore.
Oh. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is that okay if I change it?
Sure.
This is how I see Mount Rushmore in my mind.
Okay.
I see Michael Jordan. I see James Worthy. Tara Vanderveer, and Phil Jackson.
Wow. Okay.
That's
so
my.
Tell me why James
I don't know how there are, but that's my Mount Rushmore. That's in my own little mind, though.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine with me. All right, so with that being said, do you have any closing thoughts, anything, any shout-outs to anybody?
I would say just, you know, and
Ashley?
I would just reiterate irishouse.org. And
okay.
I also just want to shout out to this other another brand that I'm really excited about, InPhilanthropy. It's a clothing line brand, but really awesome. Everyone can check it out. I just had a blog recently go out last month with them, and they do awesome stuff as well and awesome stories on there as well. And, yeah, that's all.
Okay. So I have two questions real quick, real quick questions, not to hold you up. So you were in Pasadena for the Rose Bowl and representing your alma mater. So tell us about that Rose Bowl experience.
Oh, it was so cool. You know, I've never actually been to the Rose Bowl game, even though my family, my mom and dad both went to John Muir High School, both from Pasadena. So my entire family, my mom and dad's side, all grew up in Pasadena. My sister went to high school at John Muir High School in Pasadena. And so it's like a huge part of the Wiggins culture is, you know, the Rose Bowl, and my mom and dad would go on dates in the Rose Bowl. I'd hear all these stories about the Rose Bowl. So it's really cool when Stanford gets to play there. So my uncle, you know, he's a member of the Pasadena Police. So, you know, it's just, it was really, really awesome. And it was like meaningful, the game. And it was really cool. The game went like, I hadn't been watching in person. I hadn't got a chance to watch Stanford football live. It was like Revenge of the Nerds is the only way I can describe it. Like, they were so focused and determined. You know, we got to see Condoleezza Rice on the screen, which is always a blessing. She had a nice interview inside, you know, the Rose Bowl, and it was just really, really cool. You know, Stanford, the vibe is awesome there, and I'm so proud of the guys' football. You know, I really, really, really root for them because they're just such great guys, and I got to go to, you know, school with really awesome athletes that you know, now are Rose Bowl champions. So they have something to be really proud of because, you know, the beginning of their season, it's very inspirational, their story.
Very cool. Now, one last question for all the girls and young athletes out there that want to aspire to be, you know, professional athletes. What's a piece of advice that you'll give to them?
You know, I would say, if you want something you never have before, you got to do things you've never done before, and you have to find, you know, figure out what it is that you're passionate about and really, really be disciplined in, you know, figuring out, you know, what sacrifices you're going to make to get what you want, what things you're going to do that you haven't done before that you're going to get that. You know, it's one thing having a goal. It's another thing getting to that goal. And the only thing that stops you from it is doing things that, you know, the road less traveled, I suppose you could call it.
Oh, wow. Very awesome. Well, Candace, I do appreciate you coming on to Nothing But Sports Central exclusive interview show. I wish you the best of luck moving forward, and you know, keep up the great work. Keep doing great things with your philanthropy, as well as your WNBA career.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure being here. Appreciate it.
Most definitely, Candace. And with that being said, guys, it's your boy Jay Franchise, a.k.a. ThatDude.com, a.k.a. the greatest sports analyst to ever bless the sports wave. Signing off. Peace.